We were just talking about selling to Taco Desk, and you were mentioning the places you had traveled around, and you said you'd had some interesting experiences. Could you tell about some of those experiences?
Oh, well, let me think.
Okay, don't worry. Can I stop? Okay. What were, name an experience.
Well, I remember one winter we were in Davenport, Iowa, when it was just so cold. We just couldn't, we didn't want to get out, and we felt so guilty not working because we all worked on commission, and if we didn't sell, we didn't make any money.
Right.
So we decided to go down to the city hall, and probably it was the courthouse, and get the names of everyone that was born 5 years ago, because people didn't move. That wouldn't be a good gimmick, I don't think, today, because of the way they move, especially in California. But in Davenport, Iowa, you were usually stayed put.
So there's many children who'd use the desks, too.
Well, we wanted prospects, so we knew the right age. The 5 years old was about the best age to go to a parent that had a five-year-old child. And it seemed as though they were very, they gave us the books and brought them out. And there were about 20 entries on a page, and about every fifth one had father unknown. And that just shocked me. I haven't thought much of it until lately, when there's so much talk about the younger generation that all the indiscretions were just invented now.
What other sorts of experiences did you have? I mean, this coming from North Platte, was that kind of that experience obviously stuck in your mind?
Oh, it sure did. It really did. Well, a lot of people wondered how we were accepted in small towns, because, you know, that was odd. But when we entered a town, it seemed as though of all the merchants, the drugstore was always the nicest. And I guess it was because they were always run by a pharmacist who had to be a university graduate. And that's the conclusion we come, because always the drugstore was the nicest store in town. So we'd go in, as soon as we got to town, we'd go in the drugstore, and we asked the druggist if he could recommend, we told him we were doing children's work in town, we never told him what, but asked them if they knew, if he had any idea of a nice home where we could, that might rent rooms for a couple of weeks or a month or however long we thought we'd have to be there. And so he would think a while. He says, well, yes, I think maybe I do it. So we'd ask him to call up to see if they had a room. Well, he'd call them up, and then so it was just like we got sent there by the local druggist. So I made so many nice friends, because we'd stay in the nicest homes. Sometimes there were ministers' homes and sometimes bankers' homes, and we corresponded sometimes for a long, long time. And I think even yet there's some of those people that I lived at are on my Christmas card list.
But you
drift away from people, but I enjoyed many great friendships just from being able to live with them in their home.
You were with only other women right there?
Oh, yes.
Just a group of women. And you didn't feel, at that time, I suppose, did you feel any danger traveling
never
around?
Never. And I remember once when we were in Kearney, Nebraska, I wanted to go home that weekend, and my girlfriend wanted to come with me, and we got out and hitchhiked to Kearney. That was 150 or 200 miles. And a young couple that were all going on their honeymoon from Chicago picked us up and took us right to my home. And my mother was sitting on the front porch about that. They said, well, they'd take us clear to California with us if we went where we wanted to go. But there, we never had any worries at all. I never did, never had any incidents at all. Then later on, I got my own car and traveled all over with my car, and I never had any experiences at all.
But that thought didn't even enter your mind.
Never entered my mind.
Okay, that's great.
Should have. Then, let me see now. After Wyoming, we went to Colorado, and then we backtracked to eastern Nebraska towns. And after I had accumulated some money, not having my mother's great sense of thrift, I decided I wanted a real big trip. So I contacted my two cousins about my age who lived in North Platte, and we planned a month's spree. We went to Chicago, Niagara Falls, New York, and Washington for a month. We stayed at the Morrison Hotel in Chicago, two of us registering, and we divided the bill by three, so it was cheaper. We slept three in a room, but that didn't matter. We stayed at the McAlpin in New York, and we weren't staying with relatives, and we took in everything to see in New York and how we loved it. I saw Gilda Gray doing the shimmy on Broadway, and Marilyn Miller and Fanny Bryce singing, "Oh, my man, I love him so." Oh, I thought that was great. They were all leading stars at the time. But you read about all the theaters, of course, then on Broadway, and the reason they have so many is because the theaters are so small. They're tall and narrow, and they're high, a lot of balconies, but they don't hold so many people, except later on, the big movie theaters did, but the stage theaters weren't very large at all. Then in Washington, we really did the town. I saw Vice President Coolidge and talked to him. We visited Mount Vernon, where I had my bag picked by a woman who attached herself to us on the boat going down the Potomac. Suddenly, my bag felt lighter, and I fell in, and my billfold was gone. I followed her and caught up to her. She was hurrying away from us, and I caught up to her, and she was carrying her hat in her hand. And I didn't know what to say, but I knew she had it. So I just yelled at her. I said, "Did I hand you my billfold?" And she looked at me. She says, "Why, no." And I saw her trying to get, and I hit her hand like that, so, and she dropped it, and my billfold fell out of her hat. And by that time, Marguerite and Eleanor, my cousins, gosh, I remember, but oh, I gave her
demonstration. Yes.
But they had discovered I had their tickets because we had just got our Pullmans back to Omaha, and I had their three tickets with mine, their two tickets with my one and my billfold, and they were just about frantic, but fortunately it was all there.
That's great, so she hadn't had time to spend it.
She hadn't had time to spend it. So that's all.
Okay, I just wanted to, a couple other questions. You mentioned to me earlier that you, okay, when you're selling the Chautauqua Desk, about what years were those about?
1922 and 23 and 24 and 25.
So, around then, okay, so it was mainly in, were they rural areas, or were you ever in big cities?
Oh, yes, then I was promoted to a manager, and I had worked out of Kansas City, then I trained girls. Mm-hmm. Then I had all small towns in Missouri, and went all through the circuit, and went to Oklahoma and Texas, and we had the whole Middle West. We really covered it.
So, and about how old were you about this time?
I was 18, 19, 20, 21.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it selling the desk that you met your husband in?
Yeah. Well, I was in Kansas City
Okay.
But when I was in Kansas City, because I was stationary there for a while, I took extra lessons in the Horner's Art Institute in dramatics. And I was... I've skipped an awful lot.
Okay.
In Davenport, Iowa, I met a fellow that I thought was pretty nice because he was a lot older than I was, but he was been American consul to England and also to India and Ceylon, and so but his home was in Louisville, Kentucky, and Lexington, Kentucky. And I became engaged to him and decided we'd get married. And so I went down to Lexington to get married. And my mother was so unhappy because he wasn't a Catholic. And he was a big shot Mason. But he promised that he took instructions. And he promised that all the kids, if we had any, would be raised Catholic. But after I got down there, I stayed with an aunt of his, and his mother was very much opposed to him getting married. And so he said, we went to see the priest, and we were made arrangements the next day to get married. And I decided that I just couldn't.
The night before?
The night before. And the next day, we came to go to the church, and he just... I said I wasn't going. I couldn't do it, and I got a taxi and went to the train, and he was pulling me off the train. Oh, we had a real dramatic scene. But then I went back to Kansas City, and I wired Mama, and oh, was she happy. So she decided she had to come to Kansas City. Well, I evidently must have been quite a gold digger or something, because I'd already taken some of these lessons at Horner's Art Institute, and I needed some paper. So I went down on 31st and Truce. So we lived on Armour Boulevard in a great big, lovely old home, and I got some notepaper, and while I was in there, it was sort of a variety store, but also a drugstore, and I saw a fella that looked just like Harry Kaiser from North Platte, and I started to go up to speak to him, and I saw that it wasn't. So he started to, and he spoke to me. So he asked me if I wouldn't have a Coke or something, so I started to talk to her. That's why I said that I
you'd
have to tell the truth, you know. You
just got on the train from
So anyway, he wanted to know if he could take me home, and I says, oh, you've got a car? And he said, yes. I said, well, okay, if you let me drive. So he says, okay. So I only lived about two blocks from there, so he took me home, and I told him that my mother was coming in the morning and from North Platte, Nebraska, and I wondered if he'd, that I had to meet the train at a certain hour, but I said, I wondered if you could be after me at 8 o'clock in the morning, but because if you're not here by 8, it still gives me time to take the streetcar downtown to meet her at 9. So he says, I'll be here. So at 8 o'clock, he was there. And then I met Mama and she, at the train, and this Lou was there, and she was so, she thought she'd see somebody so broken-hearted. Here I had another So she was, she didn't know whether she was happy or not. Then we went to breakfast, and then so I said, well, we have to go to church. So he said, well, I have to go too. He says, I'm a Catholic. And so I said, well, so are we. So we went to the downtown cathedral. Then he took Mama all over Kansas City, and we rode her all around. Then I had already made other plans for her that evening. And so she thought, of course, Lou was wonderful. That was the only reason.
He had taken her all over
No, that he was a Catholic.
Oh, I see. After this last
That was the only reason she thought he was great. But right after that, I was sent down to Oklahoma, and he was an engineer for Black and Veatch, that was a big consulting engineering firm, and he was a graduate of Missouri University, but he was sent to Pismo Beach, California, which was...
the company, the company sent him to
Pismo Beach. To Pismo Beach, and he'd never heard of it, but they were building an ocean outfall, a sewer ocean, and it was the first one built in California, polluting the ocean. So he had charge of that. But he called me up, and I was down in this rooming house or boarding house in Paris, Texas, and he'd call me up every night. And, oh, I thought that was great. And finally, at Easter time, I was all through there. At Easter time, I went home, and my father wasn't very well, but I told Mama that I wanted to go to California, and I'd like to have her come with me. So we sent my sister Mabel, who lived out here, another telegram that we were coming to California, and she couldn't understand the big rush, why we were tearing out here. But when we arrived, why, she was at the train to meet us, and so was Lou. So she said, well, now I see the reason why I came to California. So I decided to transfer myself from Kansas City to the Los Angeles office of the Lewis E. Myers and Company.
And that's the company that was selling the desk.
Yes, and so I worked out here. So Mr. Higley was the office manager out here, and he was very happy to get me, and so he gave me territory out here, and the first one was Ventura County. And I just loved Ventura County. And Mama came with me. She thought it was great fun. And we rented a little cottage right on the ocean. And Lou came about every weekend. And we had, then I went to Oxnard and Santa Paula and Fillmore and every little Piru and every little town in Ventura County. Then all the gorgeous... I thought then, it says, you know, in Nebraska, you sort of, the country girls were sort of called country jakes with the city cousins, but in Ventura County, it was the poor city cousins and the rich country melons.
In the country
because they had such beautiful beautiful orange groves. Mm-hmm. And it was, Orange County is so productive. And it was such a, they were family size groves, you know. It wasn't all owned by a big company. And mm-hmm. it was, I just absolutely loved it. Just love Ventura County. So we decided, Mama went back to North Platte.
What year was that you had come out to California?
I came April 1st in 1924. Mm-hmm. So we decided, 25. Because by Christmas we decided that we'd get married. And we were called off at the old mission. Then Mr. Higley kept writing me that he wanted me to take over Arizona. And I got scared to death and decided then that I wouldn't get married. And I had my own car then, and so I told Lou that I just couldn't, and I had to take this extra job, and because he had a whole group of people for me to train in Phoenix and in all the little towns up the valley. And so I went to Phoenix, then we worked there for a long time, then we went to Tucson and to Bisbee and to, but finally he got sore and he got a job in San Diego, and he sent me a wire that he was coming, and if I didn't marry him, it was the end of it.
So the first time had you just said to wait?
Yeah. Okay. And so I was in Bisbee, Arizona, and he came to Tucson, and I drove into Tucson. And we went to the priest to get married and told him that we'd been called off in Ventura, California. And he said, well, that didn't do him any good, that we had to wait for 3 weeks to be called off there. And I said, well, we can't do that. And so then we went to Phoenix, and they wouldn't marry us there. So we drove all the way back to Ventura. And the old priest, Father Morgan, I called him up, and we got there on December 8th. And so he said that he couldn't marry me without calling us up. He says, I don't know how many times you've been married in the meantime. But anyway, he called us off. He was joking me. He called us off at the three early masses on December 8th, which was a holy day of obligation, so we were married at noon.
So he announced at the first three masses, that be your dance, being announced three times.
So we were married at noon, and I remember across the street was an Italian sort of a grocery and liquor store, and he went over and got the owner there, and that store is still there. So we were married there on December 8th, 1925,
at the old mission. Would your family notify
yeah,
and through
yeah.
all this?
And I know I sent Mama a telegram, and I was going through an old, I had Edgar bring in an old book that Mary Helen took, my mother's poems, and she said it almost went to pieces, and the kid, I said, you just better find that book. And so he brought it to me yesterday, and I found, my mother sent back a telegram, and she said, our heart was filled to capacity with the love of you. It's now become expanded and hold the same for Lou. I thought that was real sweet.
Okay, to go back a ways in the things you were talking about earlier, you mentioned your mother had the house moved.
Oh, I didn't tell about, well, that was the first house I was born in.
Uh-huh.
That was the old, but then she always kept the big lot on the corner, because she said she was going to have a great big home. And mm-hmm. that's when I told you the other day where she bought the convent, mm-hmm. that the parish couldn't afford it more, a great big 14-room square place, and had it completely moved for the 12 blocks, which was a terrific ordeal in those days, because they had to have a great big team of horses, and it was attached on rollers with the big steel pulleys, and they pulled it around a great big thing. The horses went around and around and around till they finally got it up to them. Then they had to move that half the block further and then do it again. But she built a beautiful home, and I think she paid $2,000 for it. And when it was finished, she was offered $10,000 cash. But that was in 1914.
So she had that home moved in how many rooms were there?
14 rooms.
14 room home, moved 12 blocks and horsepower, and it was all in fine condition when we got there.
All in perfect condition when we got, and she, and parts of that are so old that it was built with square nails. You ever see a square nail?
Yeah.
Instead of a round nail, they were four-sided square nails. But it was good wood and well-preserved, and just it looks better now than it ever did. My girlfriend went back last year and took pictures of it, and it looks better now than when we had it.
Okay, so by 1914, you'd been about 10 years old about the time when they got the new house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned before that she was thinking of using that for boarders then?
Well, it was, you see, by that time, some of the family were gone and she didn't need all the rooms. No, she'd never have a boarder. She'd never worked that hard for it. But we only had two upstairs hotels at that time in North Platte that were any good, the McCabe and the Palace. And she knew the owner of the McCabe Hotel, and they asked Mom if they ever had an overflow, if they could use if she would let them send some people out to rent the room. And so she didn't think that would be too bad, so she said yes. And so I took the one night that they were gone and I was home alone, and they called up and said they were sending out some aviators, that they were just absolutely all, they didn't have a room at all. And he said, well, I said, my mother isn't here. And he said, well, Mrs. Donegan gave me permission, and so she won't care. So, boy, I tore up, and we had a great big room that was, we called it the 40-acre bedroom, but it was the former chapel in this convent, and it had two great big double beds and a single bed and a baby bed in it.
So it was a big room.
So, I made it up, all but the baby bed, and that's just what they wanted, was two big double beds and a single bed. So these aviators were there, and when they came, when Mama come home, she saw suitcases on the front porch, and she just said, what on earth is the matter? What have you done? And I said, well, Mr. McKay, or I don't think his name was McKay, but they called from the Hotel McCabe and said that that you had promised. She said, well, I told him that I would do it in an emergency, and she called him up and had a fit, said, well, you can't pick him out, they're in there now. And so anyway, one of the aviators was Lindbergh.
Charles Lindbergh. Now, was it at this about what year was that, do you remember?
Well,
how old you were back then?
Well, I think maybe I was 13 or so.
Okay, so what were aviators doing in the
town
at
that time? North Platte had a great airport, and they were doing barnstorming, though. They went around to county fairs and did stunts.
Stunt flying. So Charles Lindbergh was stunt
flying? I don't know that he was a stunt flyer, but his people that he was with was, and he was a wonderful aviator.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe he was sort of lining up the people jobs, and we had the Duncan brothers. Then Mama just decided to leave this room for this hotel, and we had aviators coming and going.
So a lot of people came in.
But just the aviators.
She let rent it.
She liked them, and they were all such nice fellas.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Duncan brothers that were well-known stunt flyers.
Mm-hmm.
And Doolittle stayed there at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But North Platte also was the first stop on an overnight airmail flight. They that was a big event in North Platte when they flew overnight and stopped at North Platte. Then they went on from North Platte to Omaha and flying the mail. It was a big at that time a big mail center, and so many of the young kids in North Platte that worked out to the airport, for United Airlines is the one that had it. And my cousin worked there just as a kid because he was always so enamored of airplanes. And when he came out here, he got a job at the, he was a controller from at the San Diego field, and he's just retired not long ago.
Mm.
And Charles Eshelman were across the street, a boy that lived in another neighbor, a boy, his young brother, Ed Eshelman, were pilots for because it was that gave the young boys, you know, really an interest in aviation, and because they got something to do and got to know the pilots, and they went away and learned it. So many of the North Platte fellas turned out to be pilots.
So there were when you were younger, there were a lot of trains, and then the airport built there, so that you had quite a transportation center.
Oh, we had, good transportation. And when I think of the mail delivery now, I mean, if we mailed a letter at North Platte before midnight, it was always delivered in Omaha the next day. Mm-hmm. And here I can't mail anything today and have it delivered in Los Angeles.
Can't get it
even special.
Yes.
Special delivery, they won't do it. They won't guarantee it the next day.
So, okay, you mentioned, was this after the war that the aviators were coming into the...
That time wasn't, because after the war wasn't over till 18.
So these days, this was during the war?
During the war, and mm-hmm. then after it too. Mm-hmm. 18 and... the war was over, I think, in 9th November. 11, 19, 18.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys came home shortly after that.
So when Lindbergh was there, how long did he stay? Was that
He only stayed a few nights at a time. Mm-hmm. Then another times he came a couple of nights.
So he was there more than once?
Oh, yes. So whenever he came to North Platte, the hotel sent him out there.
Did you ever have any aviators' tales? Did they?
No, they didn't talk much.
Yeah.
They complained about me practicing.
Your piano.
But they didn't talk much to the family. They they just came and went, and we didn't pay attention to them. She usually had a sack of apples in their room, and they'd thank her for the apples. But we never really got to know them very well.
But was it? Did you feel special about having them?
Oh yes, I did. I felt, after Lindbergh was so famous, I felt like I was such a personal friend of his. Of course, I wasn't, but I met him, So I felt, because he really was a pretty great guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. We'll end the interview then. So this is the end of interview number one with Zita Renly on April 29th at her home.